Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
702.
The Naked Scientist.
Time for The Naked Scientist with Dr. Chris Smith. Happy Monday, Doctor.
Happy Monday. I'm very good. How are you?
I am fantastic and excited. I see the questions are coming in thick and fast already. So let's jump straight into them. I'm going to do my best to read this one. Hi, Dr. Chris Smith. Why birds and chickens tuck one leg inside while resting? This is from Nelson.
Oh, hi, Nelson. I know what he means. When you see birds standing up in water or they're standing on ice, they may well put one foot on the ice to stand up, obviously, and the other one withdrawn up inside their feathers. And the answer is that that's a big surface area for a bird, and it can lose heat through its foot. And birds are warm-blooded, so they have to look after how much energy they're burning in order to maintain a steady body temperature. So One of the reasons they would withdraw a leg and stand on just one leg is that then they can keep the other one tucked up inside their feathers, and they don't have to pump warm blood into a cold leg and lose heat.
Okay, thank you so much, Nelson, for that question. We've got a voice note.
Hi, Lebohile. A question to the Naked Scientist. I noticed on the weekend some township people were able to overpower a whole elephant, and I assume that they made soup out of it. They ate it. I just want to know what can be eaten by human beings and what cannot. And in this instance, what effects could eating an elephant have on a human anatomy?
Thank you so much. I almost feel like, Doctor, the people that decided when they ate it, it just didn't agree with their system. Like, this is not for us.
Yeah, well, there's a historical aspect to this because, of course, our ancestors, if you go back a few thousand to about 10 to 50,000 years, as people began to cooperate and they weren't farming. Farming came in about 10,000 years ago. Before farming came along, we were largely hunter-gatherers as a population around the world. And that meant that small communities worked together collaboratively to find, hunt down, track down, trap, catch, kill, and therefore butcher and eat game. And this would have included anything that was available. And because humans spread out across the world, they went to some geographies where existences were really hard to scratch out there. And some of the creatures they had to contend with were pretty big and fearsome, and they included woolly mammoths. We know that people were eating woolly mammoths because we've got the remains of them, complete with the marks made on the bones that human stone tools would have made. So we were definitely eating close relatives of elephants, mammoths, and therefore people we know could have survived on those perfectly well. They're just meat. That was absolutely fine. Who makes the rules about what we eat? Well, these days, there's a range of different inputs to this. Some of them are legal, and that's based on who owns the livestock or who has rights. If you live in the UK, you can't go and eat a swan because the king owns all the swans. And if you're caught eating a swan, then that's a criminal offence. In other countries, certain things are banned on cultural or religious grounds and also conservation grounds. We deter people from trapping, killing rare species, which we're trying to conserve because that undoes all the good work. So there's a range of different reasons, but as a species, we're pretty good at making a meal of almost anything. And you're quite right. If it tasted good, you can sure as hell bet your bottom dollar people will have eaten it.
And I think I'm sitting here wondering what elephant meat tastes like, and I don't want to judge it by the skin, but it just looks tough. And
well,
I don't know.
I don't know. I've never eaten an elephant, so I couldn't tell you. But it's really interesting because I've eaten quite a few things, and they don't taste the way you would expect. Camel does not taste the way I expected camel to taste. Ostrich didn't taste. I think I expected it to eat a bit like chicken, and it didn't. And crocodile was actually very agreeable. So kangaroo is lovely, by the way. So if you get the chance to have some kangaroo, goes fantastically well on the barbecue.
Oh my goodness. All right, I guess we're going to get a little bit adventurous, but thank you so much for that question. Hi, Lebohile. I'd like to ask the Naked Scientist, if life does flash before your eyes when you die, Do people see their loved ones fetching them, or is it just hallucination? Thank you.
Almost certainly hallucinations. And the thing is, it's very difficult to do an objective study on this, isn't it? Because if someone's genuinely dying, then it's a once-in-a-lifetime experience, and you can't then ask them in the aftermath, well, what was that like? The exception to that is people who have near-death experiences. And people often talk about stereotypical floating down tunnels and bright lights and so on. But we think this is almost certainly a manifestation of a hypoxic or oxygen-deprived brain. As people go into a situation where their hearts stop beating, for example, and blood flow to the nervous system ceases, albeit temporarily, if you're able to bring someone back, then the reason that people probably have these experiences is because when you deprive the brain of blood flow, this includes the retina, you start to drive a state of low oxygen. And if you have low oxygen, nerve cells start to fire off spontaneous activity because they can't control their electrical activity and they start to become more active than they should do. So one explanation for some of the things people experience is abnormal electrical activity driven by a brain being starved of oxygen. So that's probably more likely what it is, and that's why people give this quite similar account, having heard that that's the from other people, that's what other people have described. People may invent some of these things fictitiously, but they may also be describing the genuine sensations of your brain and retina being deprived of oxygen.
So can I ask then a question, Doctor? Tomorrow we're going to be talking about and asking all the listeners if they think people can tell when they're about to pass away, and many had already responded to our Facebook post sharing stories about, oh, when my grandmother was, you know, 2 days before she passed away, she was talking about seeing her grandmother being in the room with her. Do you think that also sort of speaks to what you were saying? Because from many people's experiences, the people who are about to pass away share things with them like they can see their loved ones, or it's time. They start telling you that they're on their way out.
In a moment, I'll tell you a really weird story that I cannot explain, and it happened to me. But before I come to that, the view of someone dying is someone just suddenly rolls over and ends their life, and that's that. And some people do die that way if they have sudden cardiac death, for example, or a stroke, which is enough to carry someone off very promptly, very rapidly and painlessly. But most people who get to the end of their life with chronic disease and are elderly don't just suddenly die one day. Some do, some fall asleep in their armchair, but many have a dying process that goes on over a period of time. And experienced palliative healthcare professionals recognize these signs and symptoms of a person whose body is slowly shutting down. And basically all the different organ systems stop supporting your body as well as they should. And so your blood chemistry goes off, and therefore your body is not operating very efficiently. So your heart's not pumping very efficiently, your tissue's not being perfused very efficiently, and everything begins to slow down and shut down. And so people have moments of lucidity, but they just drift off, and you can spot these signs. And in medicine, we often recognize people who are at the end of their life, and we're able to have the sorts of conversations with them because they also know that, and they're tuned into the fact that they know that they feel that time is up for them. Now, the weird thing that happened to me, which it could be just coincidence, when I was first a doctor, I was doing one of my first jobs as a surgeon. And I went on a ward round one morning, and I went to see this elderly lady who'd been admitted to my ward. And we came to see her, and she said, "I had a terrible night." And I said, "Oh, what happened?" And I can't remember why the lady was in hospital. She'd been brought in, maybe a fall or something. But she said, "All this crashing and banging noise, people running around, all these lights, and then, you know, pulling curtains round." And she said, "It was real commotion. It was absolutely dreadful." And I turned to the sister on the ward, and I said, "What went on?" And she shook her head in this kind of, "No, nothing. She's just sort of saying this, nothing. It was a quiet night," she said. And we said to this lady, "Well, they're there. Sorry about that. And we'll try and get you home today." And we finished the ward round and went back to make a cup of tea. And while I was making the cup of tea, I had the kettle in one hand and my bleep went off. And I look at my bleep, I ring the number back straight away because it was the ward. And they said, "This old lady has had a cardiac arrest, and you need to come." And we go to the ward, and the scene that she had described was unfolding in front of our eyes. And this is probably coincidence because it's a great story in the telling, but it was just so uncanny that this elderly lady said all these things, described all these things, and then within half an hour, that's what was happening. And I'm sure it is just coincidence, but we were totally gobsmacked at that point. Myself and the senior doctor who was on duty with, we just looked at each other and thought, I can't believe this.
Did she make it that day?
No.
I'm having such goosebumps.
I know, I did. We did. We both did. We sat there thinking, I cannot believe what has just unfolded. But might be one of those things.
Wow. All right. Oh, we've got Hank in Meyerton. Hank, go ahead.
Yes. Hello, doctor. I just want to find out, if you connect electric appliances on a three-point plug, does it matter which side you put, the neutral or the live? Because I know the neutral must go on the left-hand side and the positive on the right-hand side. But if you connect, if you've got a two-point plug, you can put it anywhere.
Well, the bottom line here is that with AC, alternating electricity, alternating current, then you have a live line and a neutral line. Now, the reason we worry about the neutral line in your plug socket is because in most systems, this is actually effectively clamped to earth. So the positive line is effectively talking to a neutral line through a device which is stapled to earth, i.e. zero. There shouldn't be a voltage in the neutral line. It can have a bit of a floating voltage, but it should be at zero. Now, the device, on the other hand, being supplied, doesn't care whether it's one way around or the other, if it's on an alternating current supply, because the current is flowing in one direction and then the other direction alternately. That's why it's called alternating current. So it's seeing a positive and then a positive and then a negative floating around zero. So it doesn't actually matter which way the device is connected up, but it does matter in terms of what you do with your plug socket, because the neutral line is effectively at zero earth. And some housing circuits will actually look for a correct voltage on the neutral of being zero. And if there's a departure from that, then it knows that current's flowing away and being lost somewhere. And so it can trip the box. But no, most devices, because they're running on alternating current, expect the current to be changing polarity 50 hertz, 50 times a second, and therefore they don't care which way round they're wired, if it's a motor or something. What comes downstream of one of those devices, though, might matter, because once you convert AC, alternating current, to DC, then polarity is very important. And so if you put it through a transformer and then you rectify the output from the transformer to turn it into direct current, then you have to be cautious about which way round you've connected things. But the wall supply, no, it shouldn't matter.
Thank you so much, Hank, for that question. Here's a voice note.
Hello, Kulebuchile and the Naked Scientist. Is water, this might sound dumb, but is water and urine has a connection? The reason why I'm asking this is that when you have an urge to go, you know, to the restroom and you keep on procrastinating, but then as soon as you touch water, that urge worsens. Why is that? Why? It's just that I'm trying to understand that. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And one more voice note, we go then to Dr. Chris.
Hey, hello, Kulebuchile. It's Ishmael here. Well, for interest sake, I do have elephant meat currently in my fridge.
Uh-uh.
Yeah, the meat tastes nice. Like, it's more like beef, but does not have that beef smell, but it does taste nice. And yeah, in terms of cooking, the first time I cooked it, I cooked it the whole night using a pressure cooker. So it's a bit tough, but no, it tastes nice. Yeah. Just that, yeah, it's a challenge to get it. But if you like get it anytime soon again, definitely, I won't hesitate to buy it.
Oh, my goodness. Doctor.
He must have a very big fridge, mustn't he, to put a whole elephant in it. That's a chest freezer and a half.
All right. So the question in the first voice note was, what is that correlation if you, because I know it doesn't just apply to touching water when you hear your water.
No, hearing it too.
Want to go to the bathroom.
Yeah. Well, the way the nervous system works is that it's all about pattern recognition and one thing facilitating another. And when we go for a wee, you hear a tinkling noise of water running. And so this is your brain recognizes that pattern of running water and often associates that with going to the loo. So unsurprisingly, when you are hearing noises of water, feeling water, touching water, etc., this also is something you do in anticipation of or after going to the loo. So it puts you into the mindset state of I'm going to go to the loo. Now, when you're going to the loo, what happens? Well, an automatic part of your nervous system, the autonomic nervous system, readies your bladder to empty itself. So what it does is it opens up the sphincter, which is the valve that keeps the water in so that things can flow out, and it triggers the muscle, which is the bladder wall, to begin to contract, the detrusor muscle. And this puts the pressure up inside the bladder and pushes the liquid out. Now, all of these things take a little bit of time. And because it's not under conscious control, you can consciously stop and start weeing. But most of the time, you don't have to think about it because it's under unconscious control. Because you have that part of your nervous system that's automatic, it gets facilitated by these other experiences, the messages, I'm now going to get ready to go to the loo. And that's why it builds up and you think, oh, I'm busting to go. Now I'm ready to go. But prior to that, you were able to hold it.
Thank you so much for that question. We go to the lines. We have Thomas in Tembisa. Thomas, go ahead.
Okay. So maybe it's the problem with my phone. Yes, I'm saying that I'm someone who usually enjoys watching ISS, the International Space Station. So about on the 15th or the 12th or 15th of December, when it was passing across the skies here in Gauteng, it was actually followed by another two objects. So even this year, in January, I saw other objects going almost parallel to that ISS. So I don't know what were those, and then I don't know if the naked science can know about such things otherwise. Yeah.
Okay. So did you get that, Doctor?
Not really.
So the International Space Station, it said when it was passing, there were two other objects that were, you know, traveling parallel to it. Do you know what those other objects are?
Well, I don't know what the objects were, but what I can say is that one, the ISS, International Space Station, which is up there about 400 kilometres above, and it's doing a lap of the Earth every hour and a half. Every 90 minutes, they get daybreak and sunset on the ISS. Isn't that an amazing day? But it's going quick and it's going across the sky a lot. So you've got a good chance of seeing it. But because it's quite close to us, it's actually quite easy to see and quite large and quite bright. And it's got arrays of solar panels. It's powered by light from the sun, which then charges up batteries for when they're around the other side of the Earth and it's dark. And therefore, it reflects a lot of light. And what you might have been seeing is different parts of the structure and the panels, which are angled to reflect the sun, or to hit the sun. So you may have been seeing simultaneously different parts of the same structure, different parts of the panel array. Or you may have been seeing a satellite which is also going round roughly across the same patch of Earth, but at a different altitude, because there are thousands of satellites in orbit now. And if Elon Musk has his way and Jeff Bezos from Amazon, then we could be looking at millions of satellites in orbit before too long. So it's possible that what you were seeing is one big object with different bits of it reflecting light, giving the impression of multiple objects at the same altitude, or multiple objects which were going across the same patch of sky. They were going to be doing different speeds because depending upon how high you're orbiting, your speed is different. But they could have sort of crossed across that patch of the sky, giving the impression that they were side by side. And in fact, one was higher and one was lower.
Thank you so much, Dr. Chris Smith. Back together on Monday.
See you next week.